This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You and I have unfinished business.
The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Get away from her, you...
Ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
At the movies on BFM 89.9.
I'm Umar Paganampakepangan alongside Ian McNally and Bahir Yusuf. Bohemian Rhapsody will be in cinemas this Thursday. It is directed by Bryan Singer and Dexter Fletcher, although he doesn't get a directing credit for all the work he did. And it stars Rami Malek as Freddie Mercury, and that is pretty much all that matters. Because when you watch this movie, it is essentially Rami Malek doing his thing for 2 hours and 20 minutes. And his thing is fantastic.
His thing is pretty good.
His thing is very good.
Are you just trying to avoid saying Gwilym Lee, is it? As well as Brian May? Because he does give a great hair performance.
Okay,
it's
I have to say,
Brian May performance.
Yeah, he looks spot on.
He doesn't just look spot on. I went back and I watched interviews with young Brian May and Gwilym Lee.
Yeah.
Nails it.
Huh.
It is scary.
Yeah. I mean, towards the latter half of the movie, you forget that you're not watching the real guitarist, right?
Yeah.
You forget you're not watching the real people. You're watching an actor play the guitarist from Queen. And it's such a weird thing to have to keep doing to your head.
Yeah. It's like live from Earth B.
Yeah.
Because you keep looking at it weird, and like, especially when he eventually gets the tash, Rami Malek looks even more like
even
Freddie
more
Mercury.
Like
and
Freddie
you're like,
Mercury.
What?
Yeah, it's insane. Now, I have something of a mixed relationship with this movie in trying to come to terms with how I feel about it, because I love this film, but I think about it and I'm like, in any other situation with any other biopic, I would nitpick so many things. But I think because I'm such a huge Queen fan, this felt like a huge celebration of their music.
Yeah.
I mean, if what you're expecting is this deep and meaningful meditation on what it means to live with superstardom and AIDS as a gay man in the 1980s, this is not that movie.
No.
Yeah.
But I think we might be picking those nits.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Because
for me, it doesn't either feel like this great celebration of Queen the band or Queen's music either, which is what I was hoping for.
Yeah.
Really? Because I got that.
There's very few scenes of them coming up with the music. There's a few nice, there's some where it really works. Well, coming up with Another One Bites the Dust.
Which I think was all made up.
Probably.
I don't know if that's real.
Yeah, but it's something movies never convey, because it's just like sitting at a piano for hours until you come across something, and then going from there is not very cinematic.
Or when they actually do it, it just comes off as very cheap.
Yeah.
There's that one portion where Freddie Mercury sits at the piano and he comes up with the entire lyrics essentially of one of the greatest songs ever and just go, really?
Yeah, he just like sits down, like there's an argument, he sits down and just plays Bohemian Rhapsody, like the
and
opening
like,
piano bit. It's
really?
Not stumbling or anything, it's just like, I'm just going to play the whole thing.
And when he does that as well, you just go, mana from heaven? Or just like, you know, I don't know.
Because I think that speaks to a problem that the movie has, in that it knows it wants to focus on Live Aid and finish with Live Aid.
Yes.
But around that, it doesn't seem to know, it needed it to be more focused. I mean, a very different, but also musical movie, A Star Is Born spends a ridiculous amount of time with the meet cute between the two characters.
Yeah.
So you build
characters.
That relationship. Whereas with this, the relationship with Mary, you don't feel it straight away. And then it did feel like the record was skipping at the beginning,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And that is the stunning irony, right? You have A Star Is Born, which feels as real as it can get in depicting the life of a rock star and superstardom and the rise to superstardom. And then you have Freddie Mercury and Bohemian Rhapsody, which is a real story, a true story, and yet it feels like a complete and utter fantasy.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about what the mass public know about Queen, especially if you are not of that generation. Now, most of us who were born a little too late and maybe never saw Freddie Mercury, we know Queen's Greatest Hits 1 and 2, right?
Yeah.
That is it. We may never have owned an actual Queen vinyl when it came out.
No, but your dad has a copy of that cassette with ABBA Gold in his car.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's what this movie felt like to me. Queen's Greatest Hits 1 and 2.
Yeah.
They tried to cram in as many of those Queen songs as possible. I mean, they even fit in Radio Gaga.
Yeah, that's I like that song.
No, it's a great song, yeah. But it's not something you would cram in usually.
Yeah, because there's no, like, the trailers showed a hint of Bowie at Live Aid, and we didn't get Under Pressure, which is, it felt like a weird omission. If you're going to do the casting stars, although the Bob Geldof guy weirded me out. Just like, it's close, but not close enough.
Yeah.
But the Radio Gaga thing brings up another point, which is problematic, which is that there's a supposed breakup in the movie that the band has to pull together for Live Aid for. They didn't break up.
Which never happened.
Yeah, like Radio Gaga was on the album that came out during the supposed period that they were broken up. Like, there's like a year period where they supposedly would have fit in this film, but they released albums and were on tour together at that time. Mm. And then I started doing research and I got more and more out of love with the movie.
That didn't bother me so much because it felt like a fantasy for me. This movie felt like Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, it's not real life. It's a fantasy.
It's not real life, right? Mm. Yeah.
Someone had to say it.
Someone had to say it.
But I felt that I know enough about Queen. Like, I was surprised actually when I did look at things up, because the way they demonize his ex-manager, Paul, is like, I thought that was over the top a little bit.
I was like, ooh, Brian May holds a grudge.
Yeah.
And that comes across.
They're creative producers, right?
And
it turns out that's actually more true, mostly. Like, there was a lot of problems there.
Yeah, yeah. But it just feels like, it doesn't feel like Freddie Mercury's story is being told from a Freddie Mercury point of view.
Yeah, because it's like, he's the sad one who sits at home at night and has parties that fill the emptiness inside. Yes. Where the others, I think, even if you look on the Wikipedia page for Queen, there's a quote from Brian May saying, "We all went nuts." Mm. Or words to that effect. And they don't. They go home early with their wives. Yeah, it's like, it starts to build, like, this uneasiness.
Yeah, it also feels like they're looking after themselves while trying to portray Freddie Mercury as the star that burned really bright and really quickly. And they couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And that just felt really sort of shortchanging the legacy of the band.
Oh, and the solo albums annoyed the hell out of me.
Oh, God. His actual solo albums pissed me off.
Yeah.
They were terrible. They were so bad.
But I understand. Like, this movie was like in development hell for 10 years. I understand the need to try and fit some kind of narrative, but they needed to choose. I don't know. They needed to, like, lose the Heathrow stuff or lose the beginning of Queen. You know what I mean? Like, do what they did with the Steve Jobs movie and just pick three pivotal moments or something like that.
Yeah.
Or just do the Live Aid movie from Queen's perspective.
And I think that was, again, like, to just pick on what you said earlier, like, it felt like the record was skipping, right? To me, it just felt like somebody had a remote control, fast forward, play.
And then the needle got stuck in the dust that is Mike Myers.
That is Mike Myers.
Who's only in this movie for a Wayne's World joke.
Why is Mike Myers still in movies?
For a Wayne's World joke.
I don't want a Wayne's World 3 anymore. I thought I did.
No,
I thought
you don't.
I did.
No.
I don't. Bill and Ted? Yes.
I want to see more of Garth. No. I don't want to see more of Mike Myers.
But it's set up for a joke that, like, the joke relies on information that's 25 years old.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
it's an unnecessary throwaway.
It's completely unnecessary. And it's another reason for him to get into makeup. And it's like, I was fine with it for a while. And I was like, this is a very odd-looking actor. And I was like, oh, no, it's Mike Myers.
And then it dawns on you.
Because he starts gurning.
Yeah. I was just, ugh. We should also talk about the censorship. I think that the record skipping might have not been helped by this at all.
Yes.
I want to talk about the censorship because I want to know who hurt the people at LPF. I want to know how badly they were hurt.
Oh, it was the gays.
It was the gays?
Yes. It was the gays.
That's clearly it.
Yeah.
Because I watched the uncut version, right? So I got a chance to watch the uncut version because I interviewed Rami Malek and they screened the movie first.
Yeah, we know.
Moving along. Anyway.
And I kind of had an idea of what they were going to cut because I thought, okay, it's Malaysia. Anything that's overtly homosexual might get cut.
Freddie Mercury is overtly homosexual.
Well, yes. I don't think they want to cut all of his scenes.
Just work through this movie without,
But you can, because a lot of things were implied, right? So there was very little, say, kissing or making out or actual sex. And I thought, okay, we can get away with that stuff. What I didn't expect them to cut was any mention of the word AIDS.
Yeah. He does say to Mary, "I'm gay," right? In the uncut version?
He says, "I'm bisexual."
And she says he's gay.
And she says, "No, you're gay, Freddie."
Yeah, whereas what we got is basically a lot of psychic conversations. It feels like Professor X is in the room because you hear one side of conversation.
Which part of this I completely zoned out.
Basically breaking up with her?
After the tour.
And he's basically, he just looks at her and he's like, "I've thought about it a lot recently." And then she goes to the window, has a little crisis, and it's not something I can be mad about because it's like, it's nothing you can change. And I'm like, you're like, what?
Okay.
He's been thinking about stuff. We just missed the whole chunk here.
I just thought that was a weird cut.
Yeah. No, and there's another weird cut at the end where they're rehearsing for Live Aid and another problem. They want to fit AIDS in, and it feels like they're fitting AIDS in as opposed to making it part of the storyline. There's a nice close up and it's a build up to the movie, and he says, "I have," and it kind of just.
Oh, I thought he said, "I have it."
They cut all mentioned of the word AIDS.
Yeah.
So now LPF has decided to basically remove reality.
It's a war on reality now.
It is the war on reality, right? It's not just the war on LGBT, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Is there a meet cute with Jim Hutton in the uncut version as well? Because we just got the end of a conversation and he walks off.
Yeah.
At a party. He's in a suit.
There's a long conversation with Jim Hutton.
Yeah, there was a very short conversation.
We had a very short conversation. So at the end when he... I didn't understand why he was on this quest to find Jim Hutton, right? The thing about the phone book, which is
it's a guy he talked to for less than 30 seconds at a party. He's like, this is weird.
No, even I forgot who he was right
then
at the end.
Then you missed quite a bit.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, because suddenly at the end he meets up with Jim Hutton and I'm going, wait, you just had a 30-second, 60-second conversation. He made that kind of an impression on you?
That is ridiculous.
We were thinking about it coming out, but people were applauding at the screening.
No, people were applauding because I think they probably were caught up in it the same way I was.
Yeah, because they do the clever thing of playing Freddie's music when he sings. And you can be taken, you're just transported.
You are absolutely transported by Rami Malek's performance. I mean, his performance here is everything. And in a lot of ways, I think I compare this movie a lot to The Darkest Hour in that Oldman's performance as Churchill saves that movie because that movie conveniently ignores all of Winston Churchill's flaws, right? And all of his screw-ups and makes him out to be this hero. And it is hagiographic in every way.
Yeah.
This movie is completely hagiographic. It glorifies Queen to no end.
It glorifies Queen, but doesn't quite glorify Freddie Mercury.
It doesn't, right? And that's the surprising thing. But that being said, what it does glorify is Freddie the Showman.
Yeah.
And that is shown off in such a tremendous manner. And I think those were the key moments in the film that I thought were very, very clever.
Yeah.
Recreating Live Aid in the third act almost perfectly was an absolute feat. I mean, I've seen that video on YouTube so many times.
I watched it at the time.
You watch it on TV, right? And it is insane how accurate that depiction is. And then the other thing which I really, really loved, and I don't know if this was intentional, but if it was, it is very, very smart. The fact that you don't hear Bohemian Rhapsody in its entirety throughout the film, you hear it in snippets. Even at Live Aid, I forgot that they didn't play the whole song. They cut and move on to another song.
Yeah.
And for me, I found that clever because that's what a freaking rhapsody is, right? Yeah. It is just bits and pieces all the time, separated, different styles of music. And I was like, I really hope that was intentional, Dexter Fletcher, because if it was, that is super smart.
Hey, why are you giving that credit to Dexter Fletcher?
Because he had to save this movie.
Because he came and saved this movie.
Yeah, because there's no way Bryan Singer came up with that, huh?
I don't know. So for people who don't know, this movie, you know, you mentioned production hell, but there was also, while it was filming, there was some hell. Bryan Singer had a huge falling out with Rami Malek, supposedly.
Yeah.
He then disappeared.
Someone in his family was ill or something, but he didn't call anyone to tell them. Like, he's the boss. He's supposed to tell people, I'm not coming in today or for 2 weeks.
And then he was fired. And then after he was fired, there were huge allegations of sexual inappropriateness with boys. And so we have no idea what's going on with Bryan Singer, but Dexter Fletcher had been working on the project for years. And so they called back Dexter Fletcher in and went, hey, you're familiar with all this material. Please save this movie. And I have to say, we recently saw The Nutcracker, which had similar issues. And watching this movie doesn't feel like a troubled production.
No. Like, it does move along, apart from the skipping record, it has, like, it has a paciness, it moves, you know what I mean? And then it builds up to that crescendo at the end. And there's the characters, the lawyer character as well, Jim Beach, Miami Beach, and the managers and stuff. Like, a lot of those characters, they work, and they're throughout the movie. It's not like a character suddenly disappeared because Dexter Fletcher couldn't get them back.
Correct.
And apparently, the Live Aid shoot was the first day of shooting.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, I think I saw a story where Rami Malek said, like, he was surprised because they did it on the first day and that cost a lot of money. So it was like, if the team didn't work together as Queen, this movie studio was ruined.
Well, I guess that was the acid test, right?
Like,
get that out of the way. If it works, it works.
Yeah, if you can live up to one of the greatest live performances of all time, you'll do all right.
You'll be fine.
Greatest live performance that saved the band.
Yeah, and Live Aid apparently as well.
And Live Aid, right?
They were making no money before that gig.
Yeah, yeah.
Were they the first performers?
No, they were. It was the sun was going down, I think. That's why the lighting was a bit weird. That scene's just amazing, though. Like, you're just taken away with that music. It's just, watch that bit over and over again.
For me, I thought it was really ballsy of them to decide to play the entire show.
Yeah.
Literally, right? To end the film, play the entire thing in its entirety. I spoke to a few people who weren't that impressed with it. Although for me, I feel that was just probably because they weren't playing what you'd assume to be Queen's greatest songs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, there were quite a few songs.
That's not the film's fault. Take that up with Queen.
Oh, no, exactly, right? But again, I just think that that's probably why, because someone was saying that that bit at the end felt a little draggy and unnecessary, which I thought I disagree with. I think that that was a very ballsy decision to end it there.
One other thing as well, with Rami Malek's performance, I have to say, I think you can imitate Freddie when he's doing his all-out Freddiness. Mm. You've seen enough of that on YouTube and all of that. And for me, the crazy thing were the quiet moments. I thought Rami Malek pulls those moments off really, really well.
Because
he has no point of reference.
You can see interviews with Freddie. And it makes the transition between his speaking voice and singing voice fine, because Freddie had the same thing.
Correct. Yes.
And that was another thing that blew my mind, that like it seems like a throwaway gag about he has 4 extra teeth and that's why he has such range. And that's a true thing.
Yeah.
He had extra teeth and he believed that it gave him more range. Stuff like that was insane. But if you go looking for interviews with Freddie Mercury, his voice is very different from what you would expect.
Correct.
From just a singing voice. And so that helped things work. But he nailed it. I mean, it's a performance that required a better movie around it, I think.
Yeah, I'm with Ian on that.
So I absolutely loved the movie because it hit me on an emotional level.
Yeah.
And when I was watching it, I think you're right. The music carried me through and his performance carried me through. So much so that I forgot about all of the made-up stuff that they'd crammed in there to make this narrative work.
Yeah,
right?
But the concern for me especially is that because I know a lot of Queen songs. I love a lot of Queen songs. I don't know a lot of the story. So I'm taking these things at face value. I'm watching it going, oh.
Is that how they came up with We Will Rock You?
But even with that, though, doesn't it feel weirdly mean-spirited in certain directions?
It still feels mean-spirited. Yeah.
And
right?
It feels like, oof, I mean, these are real people. That, like,
you know, no, it feels
I mean, if you expect Paul to put on a Darth Vader mask and start killing children with a lightsaber, he's so bad in this movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It feels like it was written by the other guys without Freddie Mercury or the Mercury Estate's involvement. And I guess maybe that was it. I don't know. It just
that was like, it was
mean.
A kind of, it was a mean-spirited thing that brought down the celebration in a way, for me at least. Mm.
Check out Bohemian Rhapsody. Let us know what you think. Do you love it? Do you hate it? Do you think it's just not good enough? I think we can all agree on the fact that Rami Malek is amazing.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm on at Umar Fagan.
I'm on at McNasty Prime.
I'm at Bahe Wyatt.
You're listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.